Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. Well, on today's episode, we have an interview with critic Al Bresloff. He will be talking to fellow critic Tom Williams about some of their favorite shows for 2006. We also have an audio review of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, and of course, as always, Chicago's theater news. So sit back and relax and get ready to talk some theater.
You are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our guest this week is a fellow critic and a personal friend of mine, Mr. Al Bresloff. Al has been a critic for a long time. Al, hello.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Tell us who you are a critic for. I know you write for several publications.
Actually, yes, I do. I write for Extra, which is a bilingual newspaper, El Imparcial, which is all Spanish, Teleguía, which is a Spanish TV magazine that now has theater added to it, which is again in Spanish, The Epoch Times, which is a Chinese paper, but it's delivered to the Gold Coast area and the South Loop. And the other is SalsaChicago.com, which is where I got started after I left La Raza.
Oh, great. So, plus you're one of the reviewers that's on the review roundup on our Talk Theater in Chicago.
That is correct.
Great. So tell us your background now, because everyone always wants to know, you know, as critics, they always want to know where we come from.
Well, I was an actor at one time, many, many, many years ago. In fact, back in high school days, when I was the first show I ever did in a sort of big production was Damn Yankees, where Frank Galati and I were double cast.
Is that right? Yeah. Like the famous director, Tony Award-winning director.
Right. Frank and I were Applegate the Devil in Damn Yankees back in 1960 at Glenbrook High School in Northbrook. And I was about the size of him at that time. Thank God I've lost some of my weight. He hasn't.
Terrific. And then you give us...
After that, I went to Goodman Theater. I studied there, and I also had worked at Music Theater in Highland Park that summer, going to Goodman. And then during my stay at Goodman, I decided that I wanted to lose weight, and I did, to do a play called Bus Stop, to play the cowboy, to play Bo. I lost...
The William Ng play.
120 wow. pounds in 120 days. Got the part, did the show, and got on a bus, a Greyhound bus, and went to New York. And 7 days later, I was in West Side Story.
The Broadway production?
The Broadway production.
And what did you play in West Side?
I was just one of the Jets. I was there for about 6.5 months, and then I did a show called The Fantastics off Broadway.
You were in the when were you in The Fantastics?
That was in 1963, and that was for 4 months. And then
that was after Jerry Orbach.
Yeah, I didn't play his role. I played Matt.
You played Matt.
Yeah, that was. Okay. I would have loved to have played
the El Gallo.
El Gallo, but they said I could sing it properly, but I just didn't look it.
So you were one of those people of our generation who just decided to follow his dream.
I wanted it as bad as it can be, and then a big old friend of ours, Uncle Sam, came after me and said, "There's a war going on, and we're gonna need you." So I did what I had to do and went to college and went to school. When I was at school, I did some plays there.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Kendall College up in Evanston, which is now a culinary school in Chicago. At that time, it was a junior college.
I remember it.
It was the gateway to Northwestern. And Leon Oftenberg, who was the theater person there, I kind of went in low profile. I wasn't going to say anything. And I took a class that was a oral reading thing, and I did a reading of Mark Twain, and he said, "You're the actor. I heard there was an actor here, so I need you to do a show. We're doing All's Well That Ends Well." He said, "I'll pay for your tuition if you do the show for me." So I did Pericles and I stayed there until I graduated, and then I went on to Northwestern for 2 semesters, and then on to DePaul from there. But I didn't do any shows at DePaul. That time I kind of like was working in order to pay for school. I had to work. And I couldn't do any shows. And I kind of got out of it for a while. Then years later, I started doing some shows, community theater up in Buffalo Grove area. I did a few shows in Lake Zurich and a couple in Elgin.
What kind of parts? Musicals, dramas?
Yeah, I did Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof. I did The King and The King and I. I've done Nathan Detroit and Guys and Dolls. I've done Fagin and Oliver. I did a couple of shows. I got a call to do She Loves Me in Lake Zurich. Somebody had dropped out of the play, so I went and filled in a couple of weeks before production with the community theater there, and I played the shopkeeper. Merovitz, I believe the character's name
is. Yes, yes, it is.
And then I got a call about a month later, or 2 months later, from Elgin. They were doing The Boyfriend, and they needed somebody to play the father, the Englishman. And I came and did that. And then again, yeah, I started
was this
doing
Was this part-time?
This was actually just as a favor. I really... This I had already started being a critic.
But I mean, your acting thing, you had been a critic and you were working a day job.
Yeah, I was working a day job and I was doing what happened. The critic part came. I retired from being in the Yellow Page business with Sprint Yellow Pages, went to work as a consultant with La Raza newspaper for their Yellow Pages. And
that's the Spanish newspaper.
Right, that's the Spanish newspaper in Chicago. And I said to them one day, I see your newspaper has nothing on theater, but you get all these invitations. And they said, we know nobody who wants to go to the theater here. And I raised my hand and said, you now have someone. And I started writing for La Raza on a weekly basis and going, making the rounds. At the time, they cut me out a few times because they only wanted things that related to the Hispanic population. Extra was a little different. They wanted a little bit of everything. And the Epic Times came to me because they had read a few of my reviews and thought it would be great for them to have something that was local. They've been doing New York theater, and people in Chicago wanted Chicago theater. So that's how that all came about.
Well, you know, we have a similar background in that. I was working at a place, and when the Wicker Park Voice, a local neighborhood paper, the editor I got to know because he shared a space in one of those common office spaces, and he said, I'm looking for somebody to write theater. And I put my hand up. I'd always wanted to be a critic. So we have a similarity there.
Right. I try not to use the word critic as much as a lot of people. I tend to think of myself more as a reviewer and educator.
Okay. Tell us the difference in your estimation.
I think my job, especially with the majority of what I write for, the newspapers and the people that I'm dealing with, the Hispanic population, a lot of them are not theater goers and haven't been theater goers. And I want to educate them to become theater goers. One of the things that I need to do is tell them what to look for and teach them more about what to look for in theater. And if you're getting the bang for your buck, if you're going to be entertained, I think going in with the attitude of I'm a critic means I have to find things that are wrong when maybe there are no things that are wrong. Maybe there are things that need to be fixed, and yes, you might want to make comments about certain things that were bad.
So you're much more of a consumer advocate and more of an educator
right.
And teaching people, especially new people to theater, what it's about and what they can expect in the
right.
show. Like the difference, Shakespeare is different than a musical.
Right, what they should be looking for.
That's needed, by the way.
And I think that more people are open to it. I've had young people who come up to me and they've seen my reviews and they'll say to me, thank you, because I've never been to a play before, and I went, and it was fun. One person from Short Shakespeare, when I explained Short Shakespeare, and most of these Hispanic kids had never been to the theater, and one of the beauties of that theater is that they've always let me bring kids, and I get 40 or 50 kids sometimes to come to the Shakespeare from the Pilsen area and Little Village area. Where
well,
we
that's
bring
great
them in.
Because, you know, we both agree on that getting the young people into theater and giving them permission to like it, and then once they're open to it, they love it.
Right. But they have to be exposed to it. And if you don't expose people to it, they'll never know what it is. It's like giving a kid something to eat. If you don't let them taste it, they'll never know if they really liked it or not.
Yeah, that's true. And you also are a real believer in bringing younger people to the show, too.
Yes.
I mean, just in general. Right?
I think that young people need to be shown. They need the education of seeing live theater. Movies and TV is what they grow up with. And if they never see live theater, they'll never go to the theater even when they get older, or they won't enjoy it because they won't know what they're looking at. They expect perfection. Movies that can cut, nothing ever happens strange, like going to Marriott where We were there this year for one of their shows, and I think it was like the last three songs were done a cappella because the lights went out.
Yes.
We had no lights, and they had no orchestra, and they went on as if nothing else had ever happened.
That was a magic moment,
right,
wasn't it?
It was. It's and there's nothing like live theater, because live theater, that can happen. Live theater, somebody can blow a line. Live theater, well, anything could happen. I did a show called Once Upon a Mattress where I played the king, and the king doesn't speak. And there's two scenes where the king is on stage with the same people, one in Act 1 and one in Act 2, and the people who were doing the show with me went to the Act 2 lines in Act 1.
Oh.
And I couldn't speak to get him back on thing. I had to do everything in pantomime. I think I lost about a pound and a half running around that stage.
Oh, that
but
had
I got
to be,
him there.
That had to be a trick.
Yeah, it was.
You got him back on
track? I got him
script?
Back on track. I got him right where they needed to be. And I went off stage at intermission, and you know, when we took the intermission, and the director came up to me, and she hugged me, and she said, thank you, because the whole show could have been shot. But I couldn't speak. I couldn't do anything to ad-lib, even, unless I did it that way. So live theater gives you something where it's an experience, and every time you go, it's different. You can see the same show two, three, four, five times. We all have different actors, different way of producing it, different director, different set, and it changes the whole show.
What would you say to those about to those reviewers that go to shows, you know, looking for a way to attack a show?
Well, I think they should ease up a little bit and go there and enjoy it and look for the positives, look for the things. If there's constructive criticism is what it should be. If you're going to criticize, do it constructively. Don't destruct. I think that it hurts the industry, it hurts the actors. I mean, we want theater. Theater's growing like leaps and bounds here in Chicago. We have more theater than ever. Little storefronts are opening up. Theater companies are blossoming. Don't nip them. Don't cut that blossom. Let that blossom grow. There's more people who want to be a piece of that theater scene. If you destroy a play, you close a play, it's nothing to be proud of, because you put actors out of work, you put production people, investors, and maybe they won't invest in the next play, which may be the producers. It may be the biggest show ever.
I couldn't agree with that more. And what advice would you give to people who love theater who want to get into reviewing and writing about theater?
Well, it's a little difficult unless they find a place, they find a newspaper, they find a magazine, they find a publication that doesn't have anything on theater, then maybe they should go in and talk to them. Maybe they should say, I'm a writer, I enjoy writing, I love theater, can I write for you? I'll do it for free. I don't want to get paid for it. I want to be able to do it. And just see if that paper picks up on it.
And of course, learn the craft. I think the
right.
more you go.
Right. The more you do, the better you get. If you watch people who have been writing, and I even found it myself. I started writing, I think it's 8 years ago, and every year I find myself getting better and better at it because I look for certain things now. I have certain catchphrases that I try not to use. I try to come up with something new and something a little more innovative in how I put my words together because I want to be more creative. Just I'm in a creative business. Theater's creative. I want to be creative.
That's a great philosophy. And I've seen you're successful, and I've been seeing your quotes in some of the advertising.
Yeah, which shocked me.
It was really
neat when I got phone calls from people out in my old stomping grounds of Buffalo Grove saying, I saw your name in the paper. I heard your name on the radio. It's kind of fun. But that's not what I do it for. I do it because I want people to go to theater. That's what it's all about.
How many shows do you see in a year?
I don't know the exact numbers. I've seen more now than I used to. I think I'm seeing on the average probably, if we look at an average of three a week, so that's probably about 120 during the course of a year to 130 possibly. You know, if we're doing three a week, we've had some weeks where there's six, so there's some weeks where a little quieter, but quite a few.
And do you vary it? I know you see the major Broadway and Chicago shows, the tours, and you know Steppenwolf and Shakespeare and Goodman. But do you see the storefront?
I see a number of storefronts. I also cover because of the two publications. I cover the ballet, I cover dance, and I do cover once in a while an opera, and I do the symphony. If there's anything that's Hispanic, I do go. I go to all the Hispanic everything. In fact, during Latino Fest, when the Goodman does theirs, I'm there for every single performance.
Tell us about the emerging Hispanic theater scene in Chicago?
It's growing. And it's going to grow more. There are things that I can't talk about that I am aware of. But there are, right now we have Teatro Luna, which is a all-female teachers group of actors who do some wonderful things. And Teatro Vista, which is the big one. It's the only equity Latino theater group that there is in the United States, I believe, as of last month. They are phenomenal. They do some wonderful work.
I know. Thank you for introducing me to that group. And I have seen their last several productions, and they've been terrific.
Yeah, and the whole thing with the, you know, Henry Godinez at the Goodman, of course, this is his big love, bringing Latino Fest. And I helped him a lot with some of the promotion this year. We also brought him to we're involved with a literacy type of thing that we do at in Cicero, where we get 20,000 people to come out to learn about reading books. The Spanish market, you know, everybody says they don't read. Well, they do read. And this year the Goodman came out and actually put on, and started Teatro Vista, they put on little shows and did some readings for the kids. So the Latino Fest is getting bigger every year. It's getting so big that last year they had to turn people away at the Goodman for that. They're free tickets for most of them.
Yes, I have covered that, and it is amazing.
And some of the things are in Spanish, and they bring in some of the Spanish groups. Different troops come in from Mexico, from Spain, and they're looking now to expand that even further. And hopefully the dream that I have, of course, is that one day there will be a theater in Chicago, a large theater in Chicago that runs every day. There's a Spanish show. I don't know if it'll happen while I'm still around, but I think it will happen. The population is strong enough, and I've seen young people, when you go to the Goodman for that, and you see all these young people who come out talking about they'd like to be actors.
Well, that's great. That's that's encouraging to hear.
It really is a wonderful thing.
Because, you know, you and I both go to too many shows where the audience is like a geriatric.
There's a lot of that around.
We need to bring the young people in.
Yeah, and I think part of it is what it costs to go to the theater. Part of it is the type of shows that are around. And although when you go to certain shows, which I know you're not a fan of Rent, but you got the young crowd there.
Actually, the last production of it, I almost kind of liked it. It scared me. I know you like it.
I love it. I think it's a wonderful piece, and I think it's a great thing for young people, but I think it's great to watch the old people. I like to see the old people there, too, the older people, just like I'd like to see some of the younger people go to some of the other shows. But you go to look at Marriott, for example, the strut, the all-night strut that they have now, which is 30s and 40s music, and you feel great, and all the older people and the younger people are all tapping
You're really good at segues. That's the actor in you, because I wanted to get into that, of what some of the great shows are around. And all-night strut is certainly one of the finest brand new shows.
Right. Evidently it was a show before. They did it before someone did
it. It was a short review.
Right. And this is just a spectacular evening of entertainment. There is not a person. I think I've talked to 60, maybe 70 people in the suburban, you know, up in the north suburbs that have gone to see it. And every one of them came out loving it. I haven't heard one bad word about that show.
Yeah, it certainly is high energy. For our listeners who we do have a review of it up in the review roundup. There's several reviews in mine and several others.
Right.
And everyone in town has raved on that show.
That's exciting. And that's something that young, old, doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter your ethnic background, you cannot walk out of there without just being happy.
That's so true. And the intimacy on that in the round format.
Right.
Have you ever done a show in that format?
Yes. Back when I worked at Music Theater in Highland Park, we did Guys and Dolls there with Tony Bennett and Ray Rayner.
You were with Tony Bennett and Ray Rayner?
Terrific. Yeah. I was in, we did Guys and Dolls. I was in that, and I was in, The King and I with Yul Brynner playing the King. I was just one of the henchmen in that when he did it. I'm trying to remember all the shows we did. We did Can Can with Genevieve, if you remember Genevieve.
Sure.
It was a kind of fun summer. It really was. Herb Rogers had a wonderful little theater up in Highland Park back in the 60s. 50s, yeah, late 50s and through the 60s. He had music theater, and then he had Tent House, which was straight
plays. Yes, I remember the Tent House.
Highland Park. Yeah. That was also his. Never did anything there. I never got to do anything. Because musical, I'm a singer, I guess, more or less. Not a dancer. Although I can if you choreograph it. The funny thing I learned was when I did The King and I couldn't do the dance for Shall We Dance until I got my shoes and socks off and in costume.
Is that right?
When I did Fiddler on the Roof and I was doing If I Were a Rich Man, I couldn't get everything right till I got the boots. Once I got the boots, I could do the whole movement.
Why is it actors have those like anchors or crutches or?
It just makes you feel the part. It's, you know, acting is believing, is what they say, and there's the method acting and the non-method acting. But when you have the props and you have the costume, you start to feel it. You feel who you are, and you become that character. You disappear. Alan Breslov is no longer there. It's Tevye. And once I became Tevye, I was Tevye. And my voice changed. My everything changes.
And how long do you carry that on after the show? I mean,
For a little bit.
I've heard of actors that it takes them a while to come
when
back
I
down.
When I did Tevye, I think the first time I did it, I think it took me about a half an hour to... Plus, I grew my own beard. I didn't wear a fake beard. So it took me about a half an hour to 45 minutes before I really felt like I was myself again. Once I was fully out of costume, got into my street clothes, I could go out for a drink with everybody and talk normal and be normal. But during that time, from the time that I got into the theater and put the makeup on, I started becoming my character. And
that was my next question, your preparation.
Yeah. Even now, I do Santa Claus as one of the things that I do during the Christmas season. I go out and I do...
Tell us about that, because, folks, I really respect this man for what he does with the charity work and with the Santa Claus. So tell us about that.
I started it as a kind of a fluke thing, just doing it I coach little kids bowling, something I enjoy doing out in Vernon Hills. And they had a guy who came out to do Santa Claus the first year I was there, and the guy looked like he wasn't Santa Claus. He had a really bad beard. The costume didn't fit him, and he didn't ho-ho-ho even. I mean, he just kind of like, here's kid. And I said to the owner of the bowling, I said, you can't do that anymore. So I went over to George over at Fantasy Costume, and I told him what I wanted to do. And he said, you can't do just that. I'll give you the outfit, but you can't just do for these kids. You got to do some volunteer work, and you got to bring me something saying you do it. The costume is yours. I said, okay. And I called Lake County, and I said, I'm a volunteer Santa Claus. I don't know where you're going to send me, what you're going to do with me, but I got the suit, and I'll travel. You know, half Santa suit, we'll travel. So they asked me to do a shelter for battered women, and I knew nothing about shelters for battered women. I didn't know what they were. And these are actually people's homes, where they're larger homes, where they bring in these runaways, these women with their kids, who can't be found or don't want to be found by their exes or spouses, and they keep them in seclusion in these homes. And they have very little. So I was brought out, and I came as Santa Claus, and the kids told me what they wanted for Christmas. And I went back to the bowling center, and I said to them, I got to help these kids, and I can't afford to do all this. And Bill said to me, what do you want to do? I said, I got to go buy these kids some stuff. So he said, come on. We went over to Toys R Us. We bought all the presents these kids wanted, went back, and gave them to the kids. That same night, instant gratification for these kids. Then I called companies around and other corporate sponsors so we can find people. Williams-Sonoma at one time was helping me. Bloomingdale's did some stuff when they first opened up in Skokie. I was able to get through Bloomingdale's some food and some gifts for kids. And every year I have about four or five companies that will give me some things to help. And I go out and I do Santa Claus. And
I heard you were doing them like three or four Santa Claus visits a night.
Well, sometimes it's two or three. Sometimes it's two or three. It depends on what they need. Now, there are some more volunteers other than me. But during the month from Thanksgiving on, I keep my outfit, all my gear in my car. If I get a call and somebody's not going to show up somewhere, I go. And I'll call my customers, you know, I have a day job. I'll call them and say, I got to go be Santa Claus, so you know, we'll have to make this for another day.
Well, I respect that. Congratulations.
I enjoy it. There's nothing like watching these kids who would have nothing. We adopt a family every year, and that family, we bring everything to them. And we have letters that go into the, and this is done in Cicero, people send in letters of what their needs are, why they need it, and then we look at the letters. And we find ones, I mean, there's been ones where people were burned out of their home 4 days before Christmas, no insurance. We've actually, 2 years ago, brought furniture. We refurnished, we put them in an apartment, and we furnished the apartment, brought a TV, VCR, clothes for the kids. They had lost all their clothes. And it wasn't a question of how much money it was, but we got the look on their faces to give them something at a time when that's so important to them. It's a time of giving. So give.
And it makes you feel good. I can see it in your eyes.
Yeah, there's no question.
How long have you been doing this as Santa Claus?
It's 31 years.
31 years.
Yeah. Wow. I'm on my third outfit, and I'm going in next week to get a new outfit. I'm ready for the fourth Santa Claus suit.
So that sort of takes care of the actor in you also, right?
Oh, yeah, a little ho, ho, ho. And, you know, the other night I did one where it was a Spanish group, and I'm singing Feliz Navidad, and I'm dancing and having a ball. And every little kid wanted to sit on my lap, but then every Latina lady wanted to sit on my lap as well.
I'm sure your wife loved that, right?
She wasn't there, so it worked out okay.
Well, she knows about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, that's great. Now, let's talk, in the remaining minutes we have, let's talk about some of the top shows of the year. Give us some of your picks. Let's first talk about musicals.
Okay.
What do you think are some of the better musicals?
Actually, one of my favorites didn't last long, was You're in Town, which I thought the production was
I couldn't agree with you more.
So good.
Wasn't it?
I mean, it was just dynamite, and it's just amazing. I don't know if it's the name.
A lot of people say it's the name.
Yeah, because it's such a delightful show, and it just was so much fun. I mean, I have a very loud laugh, which you know.
Oh, yes.
And everybody always knows when I'm in the theater. If it's a comedy and there's nobody laughing, they figure I must be sick.
Well, that's folks for you. Yeah. Al's got that great laugh, and it's what we call the Al Breslov test. If you wonder if a show is funny, if Al is really laughing, that's your first indicator. All right, what else you like in music?
Well, I did like Man of La Mancha that was done at the Court.
Wasn't that amazing?
They did a remarkable job with that in a very intimate theater, which you're not used to. Normally that would be in a large house for that show. Of course, Marriott had a great year.
Yes, they did.
So, you know, one of my very favorite, Sondheim is probably one of my favorite people. And Into the Woods, which I adore the show.
I do, too.
That was probably the best production I have ever seen of that.
Incredible voices, yeah.
It was just perfect. I mean, there was like nothing wrong with that one in any way, shape, or form. Then there was the new musical, you know, my mind, without having anything in front of me, but that there's a new little theater on Chicago Avenue by Halsted. There was that musical, like an opera type thing.
Madame X. That's on my list.
It was a very big surprise to me, because I read the press release and I thought, well, this is going to be okay. They're going to try to do something like an Andrew Lloyd Webber type of thing. And I was just shocked at how good it was. And
I thought it was going to be a sex show. I didn't read it. You know, Madame X.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, you're right. It could have been.
Based on the chamber piece, based on the French story.
Yeah, it was about a week after they had done that show at that Kuma Satra thing, which I don't want to talk about at all.
Yes.
But it was, you know, that was a late night thing for the people who've been drinking all night. This was a wonderful show that had a beginning and an end and a story.
I think it was one of the three best original shows, All Night Strut, Madame X, and Michael Smith's show that we saw at Victory Gardens not too long ago.
Yeah. And thank God they're holding that one over. Snow Queen is just a remarkable piece. It's a, you know, there I felt like I was at a folk rock opera, if you could put it any other way, because it had a little bit of everything, but it had just spellbinding, taking a story, a Hans Christian Andersen story, which I think I read. I'm not even sure if I ever read it. But it made it come to life. It made it real.
What about in dramatic shows? What did you like this past?
Well, you know, I don't see as many probably, but King Lear was magnificent. King Lear was a very strong, solid production that I loved. I think the other one that I was kind of surprised about is the one at Teatro Vista did.
Blind Mouth Singing. That was terrific. Yeah, the staging on that, they really do a great job. And the acting.
Yeah, and then just recently, of course, at Steppenwolf, the Sonya Flew.
I like that a lot.
Which, you know, one of my clients happens to have been one of the Peter Pan boys. I mean, he came here.
That Cuban airlift.
Right, yeah.
He was, in 1960.
He was part of that.
You know someone.
Yeah, and when I was talking with him about the show, and he I wasn't sure, and then he said, I'm a Peter Pan. And I said, you are.
That show come to life, huh?
Yeah, then he told me all about what happened and how he got out, and And that if he hadn't, he would have been a soldier. And he would have been forced to fight as one of Castro's people. And he didn't want to be that, and his family didn't want that for him. So, but that was a dynamic piece, and it was well done, well played. A little surprise on getting that information out to people. And
I didn't know about that. Yeah. And I'm pretty up on that history, yeah. But I just not.
I think most people didn't. They heard it, the Peter Pan, but they didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And now they have an opportunity. You know, this was an opportunity to learn about that.
Okay, and the interest of time, because we only have a couple of minutes left, Shattered Globe and Writers Theater certainly had a good year.
Yes.
Shattered Globe, The Dealer's Choice. And remember House of Blue Leaves?
I didn't see
House of Blue Leaves. Oh, you didn't see that.
Okay. That one I didn't see. But I remember going to I'm trying to remember some of the other shows that I've seen that I really, really thought were...
Well, at Writers Theater?
The Bus Stop, of course, was a tremendous production, Writers. And I think the other one that I really liked was Another Part of the Forest. I didn't get to some of the others, but Another Part of the Forest I did see, and I thought it was a solid production. There's another surprise theater. It's a very tiny little intimate theater, and it's amazing the productions that they put on there.
Yeah, Michael Halberstam's done a great job.
It's actually been a year with so much theater that there have been so many nights that I haven't been able to go because I can't go to more than one play at a time.
Yeah,
and I
getting
can't
them all
even
in is hard, isn't
yeah.
it? Yes.
I think this month in December, I think there probably were 30, maybe 35 openings in a matter of 20-some-odd days, which makes it very difficult.
Well, you got to be crazy like me to go as many times as I go. But,
right.
But
well,
I do see you at all the major shows.
I'm at all the majors. I have to cover all the majors. And I try to get to a lot of the little storefronts. I've been on Milwaukee Avenue and Lawrence. I've been to little plays there.
In interest of time here, what advice would you give, since you have this strong background as an actor and you're like me, you're an unabashed, unapologetic theater lover, what advice would you give for a young person who wants to be an actor, who wants to be a performer?
Best advice is to stay with it, stick to it, try it, go to auditions. If you get turned down, that doesn't mean you got to quit. Some directors may look at you and say you're perfect, and others may not think you're right. Even if you think you're right and they don't, they make the final decision. But don't give up. You got to stick with it if you want to be. I remember seeing a young lady. In fact, she's in the Snow Queen right now. She was. Her name is Maddie Hawkins. We saw her in her very first show she did at the Chopin Theater, and she was very unhappy afterwards. She said that she got such a small little part, and I said it's only the beginning. And now she's playing a lead, and it's kind of
she's
exciting
tremendous
to see
that.
And
show.
She is. She's tremendous. She that little bit of spark because she got it gave her an opportunity to grow. So you grow and you grow and you grow. And there are no small parts, there are only small actors.
That's a great way to send it. That's a great way to end this. Al, thank you very much. And we'll be reading your reviews, and I think you and I will be doing a few other things together in the near future.
If nothing else, I'll see you at the theater.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. And, folks, remember, this is Tom Williams. Thank you for listening. Go see a play this week.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to another episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of January 1st, 2007. The Theater Building Chicago will be celebrating its 30th anniversary season by launching its new program, Musicals for Young Audiences. The shows, which will focus on audiences ages from 3 to 8, will be written by members of the Theater Writers Workshop. The writers of the play will be meeting regularly under the guidance of the Artistic Director of the Theater Building Chicago, John Sparks, and they already have half a dozen musicals all lined up. You can look forward to The Reluctant Dragon, Who is Cinderella, and The Magic Paintbrush. For more information, stay tuned to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News Podcast. court-martial at Fort Devens, which is being billed as a riveting new drama about the U.S. military-race relations during World War II, will see its world premiere at the beautiful new Biograph Theater main stage on February 2nd. The show is written by Victory Gardens Ensemble playwright member Jeffrey Sweet, and it fits in nicely with the all-world premiere inaugural season at the Victory Gardens Biograph Theater. This will be Jeffrey Sweet's 12th production in his 25-year association with the Victory Gardens, and incidentally, he also teaches at the Chicago Dramatists. For more information about Jeffrey Sweet and the court martial at Fort Devens, click on over to Talk Theater in Chicago's Theater News section. Congo Square Theater will be starting the new year without its executive director, Adam Thurman. He has announced that he will be leaving the position to spend more time on his consulting business. Congo Square Theater will be conducting a nationwide search for its new executive director, and hopefully its board of directors can find one as good as Adam Thurman was in the position. Congo Square Theater saw an amazing increase in attendance under his direction. Good luck to you, Adam. Go Diego Go Live, The Great Jaguar Rescue, will be coming to the Rosemont Theater on February 20th. Based on the popular preschool series Go Diego Go, and follows Nickelodeon's hit Dora the Explorer Live. So if you have a kid and you're looking for some theater to go to, Go Diego Go. Talk Theater in Chicago would like to congratulate Anthony Mosley for being named as the 2007 Michael Maggio Directing Fellow at the Goodman Theater. Mosley, who is the Artistic Director of Collaboration, will be working alongside the resident director on one of the Goodman's productions. Congratulations, Anthony Mosley. Well, thank you very much for listening to this eventful episode of the Talk Theater in Chicago News Podcast. We have come to the end of the news, but before I let you go, it's time for your Shakespeare Quote of the Week. The following quote comes from Henry IV, Part 2, Act 2, Scene 2. Let the end try the man. Well, thank you very much for listening. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode ready to stick in your ears. So, until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.
You are listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago Review Podcast, Cat on a Hot Tin Roof by Tennessee Williams, directed by Sean Graney and produced by The Hypocrites. Review by Tom Williams. The Hypocrites, under the meticulous direction of Sean Graney, have mounted a powerfully wrenching production of Tennessee Williams' 1955 Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. This intense show had me riveted to my chair throughout the entire three-hour running time. Set in the Delta region outside of Memphis, we meet the rich Pollitt family as they are getting ready to celebrate the 65th birthday of Big Daddy, played by Rob Skroeke in an understated yet fiery performance. At the play's opening, we are first introduced to Maggie, played by Jennifer Grace, and Brick, played by John Burns, as they bicker about their marriage, Bick's drinking, and his inability, fueled by his lack of desire, to have sex with Maggie. In the play's first act, Maggie has several telling speeches that lay out her desires and her anxiety concerned by Brick and her place in the family inheritance, as it appears that Big Daddy, Brick's father, is terminally ill and is the owner of a 26,000-acre farm. Grouper, Big Daddy's eldest son, played by Gregory Hartigan, and his wife May, played by Stacy Stoltz, have high hopes of inheriting the farm on the strength of their own growing family. They have five children, while Maggie and Brick have none. As the play unravels, we become witness to the unspoken truths of a complex family dynamic where many things have gone unsaid for far too long. Tennessee Williams finds classic tragedy in the contemporary South. In this poetic expressionist vision of the struggle between truth and illusion in the face of morality, Williams deftly expresses the pain and loneliness each character feels. We watch as the family resorts to attacking each other as their means of relating. Williams stated, "I am trying to catch the true quality of experience in a group of people, that cloudy, flickering, effervescent, fiercely charged interplay of live human beings in the thundercloud of a common crisis." Director Sean Graney took us to the eye of that thundercloud in this production. The physicality, especially between Maggie and Brick in Act 1 and Big Daddy and Brick in Act 3, electrified the emotions and the cruelty of the family. Jennifer Grace as Maggie, in the film role that made Elizabeth Taylor a sex goddess, captured the rage, the sexuality, and the sheer determination of the frustrated wife to the favorite son, Brick. John Byrne's acting as Brick was both fierce and calm as he explored the repressed emotions and self-hatred that makes this character so enigmatic. There is a powerful and touching scene in which Brick and Big Daddy tread deep water about their relationship and why Brick drinks. It was marvelously played by Burns and Skroki. The play builds the dynamic tension gradually, allowing each character to disentangle their problems and interact effectively. The intensity of Big Mama, Maggie, and Brick work to highlight the underlying anger and unfulfilled desires of each character. Rob Skroki's Big Daddy, while commanding and intimidating, still possessed a true desire to help his son Brick with his demons. The play examines the destructiveness of repressed sexuality, alcoholism, and suppressed anger. We are made to see how our inability to honestly communicate with one another leads to tragedy. Grinney's production was respectful to Williams' vision of the work. The fine cast left all their emotions on the stage as they delivered first-class performances. The Hypocrites once again offer a most engaging show that will amaze you with its intensity and with its honesty. I give this show a highly recommended rating. Cat on a Hot Tin Roof by Tennessee Williams. Directed by Sean Graney and produced by The Hypocrites. At the Building Stage, 412 North Carpenter in Chicago, Illinois. Show now running through February 4th. For tickets and more information, call 312-409-5578. Again, for tickets and more information, call 312-409-5578.
Thank you very much for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Al Bresloff for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. Also, I would like to thank Tom Williams and Mark Meyer, without whom this podcast would not be possible. We hope you have a wonderful 2007. Remember, we are here every Monday with a new episode, ready for your listening pleasure. So until next time, I'm your host, Dustin Mote, reminding you that theater's happening. Don't miss it.